Well,
to a sound bigger letter, you can go ahead.
Is all right to start? Okay. Hi, Karen.
Good morning. We miss you. Come see us again soon. When's she moving here? Did she tell you?
She didn't say. And it's not a sure thing.
What are we doing there?
Yeah.
She really likes it here.
So. Yeah.
Hope so. You know, there's a lot of stuff that gets on the internet. She's telling me all kinds of stuff that she'll hear.
Little things slip through.
I believe that.
That's our editor's fault.
When's the trendy expose?
Yeah.
Well, that's in your hands.
Oh, I figure you're
she doesn't know the W girl, does she?
I have a question. I understand that Inside Edition did something on the
Oh, yeah. Last night, Inside Edition did a piece on Word Faith Fellowship Revisited. And they had some footage of the old camera footage from 95, they re-aired that.
So we get our
famous
we get our royalties again, huh?
What's that?
We get those big royalties.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, the, a lady is suing him. Somebody who grew up in that is suing them.
Yeah, she's suing them because
they beat her 1,000 times.
They would, if she didn't submit to the screaming prayer, she got spanked.
And oh, I hope she doesn't submit.
It hurt her back, injured her back over the years, being crouched over in that position with everybody pushing on her and screaming at her. And the fellow that rescued her, they got married, but she doesn't want, they're not going to leave that area and move on until she rescues the kids that are still there.
Wow.
That's what she says.
Sounds like kids, like, not her kids, but just other kids.
Yeah, other kids, yeah.
Sounds like this.
She's on a mission.
Like they're going to actually do something with this child.
North Carolina?
She's on a crusade.
North Carolina, right.
Do you know if we taped that?
Yeah, we taped it. We have taped it on SVHS, and then I taped it on regular tape, so we got two.
Good.
Yeah.
I would like to see it. Where's Harry? Is he still looking?
Yeah, he's still.
Did he pick
still submitting himself to inhumane treatment. Yeah. Well, any lagging things from Pentecost? Great revelations? A big letdown?
Lingering bug bites.
Lingering bug bites. Do y'all get chiggers?
I'm actually remembering
bug bites.
Oh.
Yeah. It feels like it's being remembered.
I had a funny thing while we were at Pentecost and Ole's preaching, the tiniest bug I've ever seen in my life. It was just like the head, not the head of a pin, but the point of a pin.
Like a period.
Oh, it was much smaller than that. Were you there?
Yeah.
It was just so tiny. And it was crawling across my page. And it was just unbelievable that some life form that small was a complete thing and it was just living along and crawling around on the Bible. Finally disappeared in it somewhere.
So what does that have to do with anything?
That's just kind of openers, and you'll see in a minute.
That's not
segue. Yeah, we're looking for a good segue here. Anybody else? Wayne.
Preface. I know I'm in the minority with this problem that I have. But I would like there to be like 25% music and 75% talking in every worship service that I'm at. And I've noticed that our ratio is down to about 2% music and 98% talking. And I know that I wasn't there Saturday, so it's maybe not fair to say, but Friday I was having a problem with the extreme amount of talking in the second rate, in the second place at the singing.
I think that's because our talker was talking. Our main talker guy?
Yeah.
The idea was to let him talk.
Yeah.
But we can institute him, you know, morning hymn, I think, in the morning meeting, what might loosen everybody up. And
but it's really in the mood to hear.
Actually, we did that one.
I'm with you, Wade. I like morning hymn.
Yeah,
too.
I would too.
So really?
You're not
the minority.
But also, the music person, one of the main music people, was very late.
That's traditional. I know.
That was later than usual.
Yeah, but I'm not holding that.
No.
John, you're for you.
A couple of things, I think I mentioned this somewhere, sometime, that really struck me was the idea of the wave offering and its significance. And I've been around and heard this stuff for 30 years, but I could never get a grip on the wave offering. Y'all got a grip on it now? Did y'all hear the wave offering explanation?
The shaking.
The shaking, yeah. It's the word, if I remember correctly, which I probably don't, but it's a word something like tonopa, which the wave word, and it actually means or is tied to the idea of shaking, an earthquake. And that symbolism is that if you've ever been in an earthquake, and anyone ever been in an earthquake, you just come undone. Earthquakes can do it to you. You'd be amazed at how fearful and it just wipes you out. You lose all your moorings, your balance goes, everything that you trust in, you know, all the physical principles of life and your body's balance and its ability to cope with the world. It's just all gone. The earth moves out from under your feet and you just can't. You can't believe how fearful it makes you. And then there's aftershocks, and they bring back the fear. And being from California, this is one of my great experiences. Well, that's a shaking, and it wipes you out. And it wipes you out and leaves you. You can't do anything but trust in God, because He's either going to take you or He's not. And it's all in His hands. So you're in a kind of an interesting faith position. And the idea in this wave offering that you've got two loaves, one representing the first covenant, one representing the second covenant, and all that that implies, which our little brains cannot really get a good grip on all that that implies, but that's part of what I'm going to speak to this morning. But that first covenant and that second covenant are fully tested, fully shaken, fully purified, fully brought to fruition. And at the completion of it, you have the loaf, which represents the finality, the ready to be eaten, as the bread song implies. And then that is offered to God. And that's prayerfully where we are, that represented us at Pentecost, that we had been fully tested, tried, and proven, made into a loaf, ready for consumption, and offered to God that He might have food.
Question: what's the difference between, you're saying there's a first covenant and a second covenant?
Yeah, you know, like the Old Testament, New Testament.
Oh, I thought there was just one covenant, and it was just sort of an artificial divide.
Well, that is on the Old and New Testament, but there's two covenants.
Which are one thing. That's why they're offered as one offering.
Yeah, good point. Good question. If you got any more, just bring them on. Somebody can answer them. So, where does that put us even today? For me, personally, there's been kind of it's such an event, Pentecost, and then it's over. And it's like, it's behind us, in a way, in time, it's behind us. And yet everything that we did is somehow still with us. And I'm trying to think this morning and last night about what it is. In 2 Timothy, don't go there, I'm just going to read one verse. It says, it is a faithful saying, I'll read a couple words. It's a faithful saying, for if we will be dead with Him, we shall also live with Him. If we suffer, we shall also reign with Him. If we deny Him, He will also deny us. If we believe not, yet He abideth faithful, He cannot deny Himself. if we believe not, what is there anybody in here that ever experiences not believing? You know, it's kind of.
Who has not experienced?
Yeah, who has not experienced that place? And then you go into conviction and, oh my God, what am I going to do now? I don't believe right now. Mm-hmm. All right, he cannot deny himself. He abides faithful. And we can rest whenever we find ourselves in the weird place of unbelief or anger or any place that is, you know, outside him. That's the one thing we can count on, that he abides faithful. He's not moved emotionally by the things that we are. When things are out of sorts and you don't like the conditions that you find around you and you get all flared up, you know, and you're all upset about stuff, well, you go back at that point to the rest in him. Okay, that little sentence is so easy to just go back into the rest, folks. Oh, is that it? Okay. Well, sometimes it's not easy to get back there unless you have a good understanding. And the understanding, and this is my point for this morning. Remember at that time what he has done. And if you start remembering what he has done, pretty soon the things of the earth will go strangely dim in the light of his glory. And I had to throw that in. That's my, I'm up to about 2%.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of smooth.
Yeah, it was kind of a nice transition. I was thinking about how much he has done. And I went through all these feasts. I mean, we've been through one celebration of one little feast, and we probably did one-tenth of it right. He has done so much at Pentecost. He had done so much at Passover. He has done so much at Tabernacles and all the feasts in between with Ab and Esther and Ruth. And we've looked at it year after year after year, and we've uncovered this incredible treasure of things that Christ has done, and yet some little thing comes along and all that, it seems to get forgotten, and this looms huge. Oh my God, here's this.
There's that little bug.
Yeah, that little bug. Come on now. Where's Ronnie? You missed the bug analogy. It's a matter of proportions. We take this little thing that gets us whacked out, and it becomes everything, and all that he has done suddenly is insignificant, because here's this big thing. And our exhortation is to always run and rest in him. And what I'm trying to say here is, at those points, if you want to get all emotionally, you know, worked up about something, fine, but in the midst, travel back and remember and look at the things that he has accomplished. And the idea that we're told to rest in him and what he has done and his works. There's no way to expound on it all this morning. We don't have to, because you've all experienced it. We've all been together through megatons of understanding and seeing and getting the ahas. Oh yeah, now I see, now I see, now I see. Some little thing comes along, now I don't see. This is big. But it's at this point where this thing is trying to grip you, that faith, that you return to his faith. Again, and that's another one of the points. You don't trust in your faith. You return to his faith and what he has accomplished and what he has done. That's why we're always exhorted to abandon ourselves so that we can perceive and observe his mighty works and his right arm that's gotten him the victory. And that's our total source of life and power and being. But if we forget that, and if we let the things
that trip us up daily take us, then that's where we're moved by every wind and wave of doctrine, because doctrine is just any little thing that comes along and we submit to it. And so it's, and we forget. So it's this point that I was trying to pull us down to if you can for a while, and you have to meditate on this to get a grip on just how much has he done? How much have you seen? What are his works? What have you experienced just in this community? What have you personally seen from your studies? That's the accumulation of the knowledge of him, that this is so ready to cast off and forget.
This being your mind.
This, yes. I'm pointing to my head now. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about the analogy we talked about a long time ago, where, you know, there's this huge mountain like Pikes Peak or something. You can see it right there. You're you know, down the plain someplace, there's this gigantic mountain. You know, and you can put your hand over it and make it disappear.
Yeah.
You can think that's something. You know, that's like, you know, we go like, uh oh. You know, this is all, you know, where did it all go? If you move your hand out of the way, you see it. You know, that's perspective. From our perspective, it's like we do these little things and suddenly we, you know, all we see is us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And or we think we got some kind of control over stuff, like, you know, I can make this happen or something. It's a delusion.
Yeah. And it's that perspective again. It's like that bug. We're that bug. You know, we're so tiny, and so all we're doing is just bugging around, you know, from God's point of view. We're just grasshoppering. And the size, the fact that we can carry life, we in our tininess carry the very creator of the universe. It's more than we can get a grip on. But if you stop and rest a minute and think about it.
I have an analogy too.
Good. Speak up.
I was thinking this morning, you know, being a believer, it's like jumping out of our airplane without a parachute. The word that came from, that's what I
thought. That's real faith, right?
The scariest thing you could think of.
Yeah. And believing that you're not going to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we don't teach that around here, but.
No, I'm just saying that's
what
I thought. Yeah.
Advocating
that we teach that.
You're not advocating that, okay. Maybe Tom would entertain that.
Yeah, Tom probably would understand it.
Yeah.
And now with Tom, but still, I like it.
Good.
It's not something I made up.
Well, you don't, yeah, that's a, it's like the guy on the mount, the hanging by the cliff, you know, said, God, help me, help me. And he says, let go. And the guy says, is there anybody else up there? You know? Any other analogies? Comments?
If you take the word time.
Pretty good, wasn't it, huh?
Actually, your California earthquake analogy really got to me. Because, that's like, you know what one is, and I don't. And I'm really
yeah.
Earthquake.
Well, what
about
now?
It's like.
People flush that.
Okay.
Have you jumped out?
Yeah.
Well, <Earth's> analogy. Yeah.
When I was, it was in 71 that earthquake hit in California, and it, fortunately, it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. And I was, you know, 100 miles away from it, but the house I was in started doing this. And it woke me up. I wasn't even conscious of what was going on, so I wanted to go out into another room to see what was happening. And I walked toward the door, and I bumped into the wall. It was like, that was that disorienting. I couldn't even walk in a straight line the way the shaking was taking place, because I don't think it goes just one way. It just is all confusing. So,
And then for at least a couple months afterwards, I'd moved down to L.A. and I was staying in a two-story house, sleeping on the upstairs. And several times during the night, boom, 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 boom. It was like that shark sound and Jaws. Boom, 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 boom. Yeah, that's the way it would felt. Yeah. And you would think, this is it. Because many, you know, places had crumbled and freeways had collapsed and all that. So you thought, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. You know, so you start making peace with God or whatever.
Yeah. So. I guess the wave offerings, the shaking, you know, is to shake all of our, whatever our false reality is.
Yeah.
So that we, you know, and the thing is, I guess it just keeps on shaking. It, whenever we go back there, God shakes it. So,
yeah.
So we'll know that's not real. But that's, you know, that's such a gripping picture because, you know, the earth, you always assume that's going to be there.
It's the last thing you can stand on.
You assume you're able to walk down, you know, a hallway.
Yeah.
Without
bumping into the walls.
Into the wall.
You didn't say slam, you know, say bump.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody slammed into it, though.
But we don't understand what we're trusting in. We think we're trusting in God, you know. But let a little earthquake come along, and you find we don't. But meditate on it a bit. Remember and see what He has accomplished and done. Think about that, and then go about your way. And then watch the things come along in your life to test that. And it's usually the brethren or the sistren.
Yeah, I got a little taste of it last night. But meditate on that analogy of jumping out of the airplane without a parachute.
Yeah, try that. Well, anything else?
Just thinking of the times in Acts when they prayed and the place was shaken.
Yeah, that's right. That's a prayer.
I knew you
were going
to have to try
and talk. And that was right after Pentecost, right?
Yeah.
The next thing they did, you know, was get together in this somebody's house.
And yeah.
Shaking.
But it was shaken in terms of the shaking that we've been talking about.
You know what? It might have been, you know, instead of shaken in terms of like an earthquake, yeah, kind of shaking, but you know,
a physical shaking, and
but it was to illustrate what we're talking about, you know, and it became, that's, you know, that's why things are in the Bible. That's why stuff we do isn't in the Bible. You know, it's not like getting written up and added to the Bible because it was already, you know, those, some of these things happen like just as an illustration for all time. You know, like the sun going dark and all that kind of stuff, to illustrate the spiritual reality in through the physical, and then it becomes a witness, you know, another witness. It doesn't have to happen every day, you know, physically.
Well, I just think it was shaken in terms of sifted.
Well, I think the other way.
Yeah. I think God's been shaking our cars.
Yeah. Curtis is messenger.
Curtis is an angel. He was an angel, so my God.
Yeah. Been shaking our wallets. Well, a whole lot of shaking going on.
Bring on the shaking.
I guess the suburban is someplace.
Yeah,
it's
still shaking.
Not stirred.
All right, well, that's all we have for this morning, you folks out there.
And we'll meet again tomorrow morning. Yeah. So take it, big guy.
Hoo-ah.
Hoo-ah.